And we're holding on Chofes Amud Beis, the second Mishnah. Mishnah says, suppose you find the lost animal. Now, you have to consider, you know, on the one hand, you have a lost animal, it's going to cost you in order to keep it, because you're going to have to feed it and do different other things for it. Eventually, you're going to be entitled to recoup that cost from the owner. And it would be, as Rashi points out, if, let's say, for example, it wouldn't be really worthwhile if you found an animal worth $100, let's say, and by the time the guy shows up to collect it, you've given it more than half its value in food, and then you're going to be billing him for that, then it's not really worthwhile to him. So therefore, so the Mishnah describes what you should do as far as that. So the Mishnah says, kol davar sha'oseh v'oichel, any kind of animal that does work and then it eats. So for example, you found an ox or a donkey, so their time, their labor is worth something. So you can have them working for you, and then that'll offset the cost of feeding them, most of the cost anyway. You can rent them out to somebody else. Same idea. So you do that. You should have them do work for yourself or for renting out to others and eat. In other words, in that way you're offsetting the cost of the food and everything that you're giving it with the work that you're getting out of the end. And that way, when the owner comes to collect his animal, you won't have to, it won't be that you're going to be charging him a huge amount, which is not going to be worth it to him. When you have a type of animal that does not work for, that does not work for its keep, so then you mocher. So then what you should do is you should sell it instead of keeping on. Now the point is, Rashi says, whenever possible, you do want to return the person the original animal, because a person would rather have the animal that he's used to, that he trained already, and everything. On the other hand, we're saying that you don't want to have where it gets to the point where you're going to end up charging him so much that it's not worth it relative to the cost of the animal. So now, when you have an animal that requires food and another upkeep, and it doesn't do work, it doesn't do work to offset that, then what you should do is you should sell it and hold on to the money, and that way when the owner comes, okay, he won't have his animal, which he would have preferred to have, but on the other hand, he'll get back the full value of it at least, and he'll be able to go buy another animal of the same kind. Now, obviously, you don't have to do that. You want to act l'fnim mishuras hadin and support the animal out of your own pocket. You have the story of Rav Chanina ben Dosa in Tainis, who did just that, where there was a person, poor person left chickens by his doorstep, and Rav Chanina and his wife are taking care of them until they make a nuisance of themselves, and then he sells the chickens and buys goats. And now goats are not a work animal, and he's sending them out to graze, but there's some upkeep that has to be done for them, and eventually, years later, the guy comes and Rav Chanina gives him the goats. Now, Me'ikar Adin, Rav Chanina would have been entitled after a certain amount of time to just sell the chickens and keep the money in safekeeping for the guy until he comes, but in this case, he was acting with Nimashos Adin. But he was talking about in the mission of the basic halach. So Shanema, because the Pasuk says, Vashe Voiso Loi, the Pasuk says, you should return the lost object to him, which means look into what the proper way is to return him, meaning, in other words, that again, if you have that you're going to end up charging him so much, Rashi uses the expression more than half of the value of it, implying that up to half would be fine. But you're going to be charging him more than half the value of the animal for the food and the other upkeep, then it's not going to be worth it to him. You haven't really returned it to him properly. So whenever you have that the amount you'd be charging him for the food and everything is going to be half or more than half the value of the animal, then at that point you should sell it and keep the money unless you're planning to do l'fnim mishuras hadin like Rav Chanina ben Dosa and continue to keep it for him indefinitely. So the Mishnah continues. Ma'yehei b'damim, what happens with the money? Are you allowed to use that money? Rav Taufen says you are allowed to use that money. Therefore, because of that, it means, in other words, that in effect, you're like a shema socher, or even like a borrower, like a loiva. And therefore, if the money is lost, then you're still chayav achrius, and you're going to have to reimburse the money because you had the ability to use it. Rabbi Akiva in the law yishtamish behem. Rabbi Akiva says you can't use them lefichach, and therefore you're only like a shem asacha on them. You're only like a shem achinam on them. Oh, do I chay bachri your son? Therefore, if they're lost, then you're not chay bachri your son, because of course, as we know, shem achinam is potter for almost everything except for unless he's presheya or unless he's shelayach yam, which we're going to talk about in the next pair of those days. Okay, so the Gemara starts off. So when you're saying in the first part of the Mishnah, you're saying that if the animal works for its keep, then you should have it work, and then you're, and then that'll offset the cost of taking care of it. The question is, olam, is that still forever? If it does eventually, it's still the cost of taking care of the animal is still going to exceed the amount that you can get, the amount of work that you can get out of it. And you also have, more to the point, anyway, you have the tircha of watching it. You didn't sign up for this, that you're going to be watching an animal. How can you put it on indefinitely, like the Mishnah seems to be implying? And the answer is, Amar Rav Nachman bar Shmuel, Ad Shnei Masa Chodesh. You're right, you don't have to take care of it indefinitely, just until 12 months. After that, even if the animal is a work animal, you can still at that point, you can sell the animal and then put the money aside and wait for the owner to come back. Usually, b'chlal, after 12 months, there's a likelihood that the owner has been miyayish anyway, but nevertheless, if you are going to keep it beyond 12 months, at that point, you're allowed to sell it. There was actually a machlokas you're showing him whether we mean 12 months from when you first found it or from when you rented it out. Or started working with it or whatever. Anyway, Tani Nami Hachi, we learn similarly in a Braisa, Kol Davar She'oseh V'Ochel, any type of animal that does work and eats, could be part of a chamur, for example, a cow or a donkey, Metap V'Henad Shnei Masach Chodesh, you take care of them for 12 months, Mikan V'Elach, after that, Shom D'Mehen, you evaluate how much they're worth, Oman Michan, and you set aside the money. So we're shunned mehen now. That means, in other words, it means that you sell them and set the money aside. Whether you have to sell in Beis Din under the supervision of Beis Din, or whether you can sell it by yourself. Tosfos over here refers to something that they write in a couple of more blocks on Lamed Beis and on Aleph, where they discuss that point. And also, there's a discussion among Rishonim. Are you allowed to evaluate it and keep it for yourself? Are you allowed to figure out for yourself? Listen, this animal is worth $100, so fine. I'm going to set aside $100 for the owner, and now I can start using this animal. Instead of having to go and buy an animal for this purpose, I may as well keep this one and in effect buy it from the owner. Is he allowed to do that, or does he have to sell it to somebody else? That's also a discussion among Rishonim. Anyway, shummed mehen would mean he evaluates how much they're worth, uman nichon, and he sets the money aside. Manichon can mean to set the money aside. It may also mean that he's allowed to keep the animal for himself once he's paid the amount and set it aside for the owner. Next, the Braisa continues. Agolim usiyachin, if you find young calves or young horses where they're too young to do work yet, metapven shloisha chadashim, those you have to take care of for 3 months, mekan ve'elach, and after that shom dmein o manichon, then again you evaluate how much they're worth and you sell them and set aside the money, or again maybe you sell them to yourself as the case may be. Continues the Braisa, avzin v'tan golin, as far as geese and chickens, and we're talking about and tanagolim are roosters, so you don't even get eggs out of them. So then the top of them shloshim yom, then you only have to take care of them 30 days, mikan ve'elach sham dmein manichon, and after that you can sell. So we see that yes, even with animals that work, such as cows and donkeys, you do in fact have a maximum amount of time that you're expected to keep them and take care of them. So now we mentioned roosters. What about hens? Amr of Nachmanides, time to girlus kibahemagasa. For this purpose, a hen, which after all lays eggs, and you can get and you have the eggs as the work that it does. So that's kibahemagasa. That has the din like a large animal, where you have to keep it up to 12 months. Gemara says Tanya Namihochi. In fact, we learn like that at a Braisa. Time to girlus or behemagasa. a rooster or a large animal like a cow or like a cow, metapavan shnemos achodesh, you take care of it for 12 months, and be kind of elach after that, shomz mein amanichan, you sell them and you set aside the money. Agolim usiach metapavan shloshim yoim, calves and ponies, you take care of for 30 days, and then you set aside the money, then you sell them and set aside the money. Now, the Gemara is going to ask in a second that, wait, didn't we just say in the previous price of 3 months? So we'll get back to that. Abzer, Batan, and Gurlin, and as far as ducks and as far as geese and chickens, or as far as geese and roosters, anything else where the taking care of it is more, is worth more than the amount of benefit you get from it, the amount of work or the amount of eggs or whatever, then you only have to take care of them 3 days. So the Gemara points out, Kasha Avzin Batan, Kasha Agolim Usiachin, Agolim Usiachin. Now you have a contradiction in the braises between as far as calves and ponies. The first braise had said 3 months, the second braise said 30 days. Also, Avzin Batan Agolim, Avzin Batan Agolim. And you have a contradiction between the two braises as far as geese and roosters. The first braise said 30 days, the second one said 3 days. So what is it? And the answer is agolim usiochin lekasha. There's no contradiction as far as the calves and the ponies. Hoderaya v'hoderpetum. It depends whether the animals are the kind where you can send them out, or you live in an area where you can send them out in the meadow to graze, versus v'hoderpetuma, versus you have ones where you have to keep them at home and feed them yourself. So Rashi describes, let's say there's a time of year, for example, when there's no grass out growing outside to feed them, or maybe it could be you're living in an area where there's no grass or whatever. So therefore you have to keep it in your house and feed it. So that you only need to keep them for a much shorter amount of time, because then of course you're going through a lot more tircha. As opposed to if you can send them out to graze, then you should hold on to them for 3 months. True, they're not doing work, but on the other hand, you're not really putting very much expense into keeping them either, because for the most part, they're eating on their own. Similarly, Avzin v'tanu gerlin, nami lekasha, there's no contradiction as far as the geese and the roosters, hover zutri, because one's talking about large ones, the other one's small ones. Rashi explains the distinction is large geese or large roosters eat a lot. So therefore, so it's enough to keep them for 3 days, and after that, the cost of taking care of them is high enough that you're not obligated to do it anymore. You can sell them, as opposed to small ones don't eat that much. Therefore, that was the first braisa had said that you should hold on to them for 30 days. Most of Tagoris HaGrua points out that the Rambam, and actually most of the Rambam and the Nemuka Yosef, and actually many other Rishonim as well, flip it around and say, on the contrary, the large ones are the ones that you should keep for 30 days, because since they're large, they can forage for food for themselves for the most part. Chickens, for example, we find all over Shas will peck in the garbage. So when they're large, they can do that themselves, and therefore, again, you don't have that much expense taking care of them. Small ones, which are too small to do that, and you have to feed them, then those you keep for a maximum of 3 days. Okay. So that's that. So even with work animals, there is a maximum amount of time you keep them, and with non-work animals, there are shorter amounts of time. And the Mishnah had said b'she'ina osev oichol, that if it doesn't do work, if you don't get any benefit out of it, then you sell it. So Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa, it's based on the idea that the pasuk says v'ashivoy seloi, you should return it to him, which means re'ei heyach tishivenu loy, which means see to it how you're going to return it, that you're going to do a proper return. You shouldn't, for example, you found a bunch of calves and you're going to take you're going to have to feed them so much that the value of one of them is equal, that the value of the food that you gave them is equal to the value of one of them, because that wouldn't be a hashava. Then when you're giving back, you're going to be charging him so much for the amount of food that it's not worth it to him. Similarly, siyoch l'siyochin, don't do the same thing with ponies, to take the amount that it would take to feed the amount that it would take to feed all of them is going to end up equaling the cost of one of the animals. Abs in town of Golan, and the same thing as far as geese and as far as roosters. So in all cases, then the Chachamim evaluated how long it's going to take before that comes out, that the amount that you fed them is so much relative to the value of the animals that it's not worth it to the owner, and then at that point you should sell it. Since we're saying over here, Egel La'Golim, and the other ones, that implies, for example, you found two calves, then you shouldn't, they shouldn't be giving the value of one calf to feed to the other. This is where Mephoshim point out, this is where Rashi got the point that he said that if it's half or more, then you have a problem. If it's less than half, then it's not a problem, and go ahead and do that. And when the owner comes, fine, you're going to be charging him for the food, but it's less than half the value of the animal, and therefore it's still considered a proper hashava. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Mayehei Bedomim, what are you supposed to do with the money when you sell the animal? Reb Tarfon and Yishtamish V'chol, we said we have the Machlokas Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva, whether you can use the money or not, and therefore whether you chayev achri yosef. So the Gemara says, Ad kan loy pligi ella v'nish elach shenishtamish behen. Now the machloka seems to be only when he's able to use the money. Now Tosfos and many other Rishonim point out that we don't necessarily mean whether he actually used the money or not. In fact, the Gemara is going to point out, according to Rabbi Akiva, he's not supposed to be using the money. If he does, according to Rabbi Akiva, who said in the Mishnah that he's not supposed to be using the money, and therefore he's not chayav b'achri yosef, fakir, if he actually used the money, that would be even worse. Now he'd be shaleach yad b'pikadon. It would be that he, in other words, Rabbi Akiva, as we're going to develop in this sugya over here, considers the money like a pikadon. Well, obviously, if you take a pikadon and use it without permission, then that's shlichus yad, which we're going to learn about in the next perek. Then you're chayav for everything, including einsin. So obviously we don't mean in the Gemara over here, Nishtamish Behen, and when Nishtamish Behen means he actually used it or not, but just means whether he has permission to use the money or not. The point that I'm talking, he has permission, and the fact that he does already makes him a Shema Socher or a Shoyal, whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, not. So, Ava Loi Nishtamish Behen, it sounds like whenever a person does not have when the person does not have the ability to use the money, im avdu potter, and that sounds like both Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva would agree that he's potter from if any onus or gneva v'aveda or anything happened to the money, because he'd be a shemachim. The problem with that is leima tevet yufta did Reb Yosef. In that case, does that mean that our Mishnah would be a contradiction on Reb Yosef? The Itmar, because we have a discussion, which we learned in Baba Kama. Shomer Aveda, when a person is watching an Aveda. So anytime you found something, you have to watch it until the owner comes. What kind of Shomer are you? Rabba Omaka Shomer Chinam, Rabbi Yosef Omaka Shomer Socher. So Rabba says that the din of a Shomer Aveda is like a Shomer Chinam, meaning that he's potter for almost anything. He's only chayav only if there was Pshia or Shlichus Yam. Rabbi Yosef Oymach Hashemah Socher. Rabbi Yosef says that he's like a Shemah Socher. So therefore, he'd be chayav for Gneva Vaveda, he'd be potter for Einsing. The reason we learned in Baba Kama a couple of reasons why Rabbi Yosef would consider him a Shemah Socher. We have the concept there called Pruta de Rabbi Yosef, which is that when he's taking care of the Aveda at that time, he's potter from various other mitzvahs. If, for example, while he's taking care of the Aveda, a poor person were to come to the door and ask for tzedakah, he would be potter from giving the person tzedakah, because he's osik mitzvah and he's potter min mitzvah. Tosfos both there and here point out, it doesn't mean the whole time the Aveda is by him. You don't say he's osik mitzvah as long as the Aveda is by him. Otherwise, for example, every time a person is wearing tefillin, a person is wearing tzitzis the whole day, he'd be considered osik mitzvah and he'd be potter min mitzvah. Obviously not. So it means that means only when he's actually actively occupied with the mitzvah. Anyway, that's one reason. The other reason the Gemara says over there in Baba Kama is because Hashem imposed on him the responsibility to guard it. That itself makes him a Shema Socher, which one way of explaining that means, in other words, because now he's getting a Schai Mitzvah for it. Anyway, the point is, according to Rabbi Yosef, he's a Shema Socher regardless. So, and there we're talking about a Shomer Aveda. You're not necessarily like in the Mishnah over here where you're, we're not talking about necessarily where you're selling the animal and holding on to the money. We're talking about all cases of Aveda. Even let's say, now what happens if you found an Aveda of money itself? What happens if you didn't find an animal and then sold it? You found it to begin with, a purse full of money, and you're holding on to it. You certainly don't have the right to use that money meanwhile. And yet Rav Yosef considers you a shomer sacher, whereas from our Mishnah, the implication seems to be only when you have permission to use the money, only then are you shomer sacher, like Rav Tyfon says. So in that case, then our Mishnah would seem to be a contradiction against Rav Yosef. So the Gemara answers, So Rabbi Yosef is going to answer, you know, when it comes to Gneva Aveda, even Rabbi Akiva is going to agree that he's Chayim, because he is a Shomer Sacher just by virtue of being a Shomer Aveda, irrespective of whether he's able to use the money or not. Even Rabbi Akiva, who's saying you can't use the money, Rabbi Yosef would still say that you're a Shomer Chinam. The machlokas is, as far as a shoyal, after all, is chayiv and oinsin as well. So the machlokas, Reb Tyfon and Reb Akiva, is whether this person is chayiv and oinsin as well. Reb Tyfon sava, shorolet abaron leishtemushi begavayu. Reb Tyfon takes the view that the chachamim do allow the shomer to use the money in this kind of case, where he sold the animal and is holding on to the money. Behavale shoyal alayu. Therefore, he becomes a shoyal on the money. Strictly speaking, Tosfos says, really, where it's not really a shoyal, technically in Lashon Kodesh, you have a difference in terminology between whether you're borrowing something that you're going to return the exact same thing versus when you're borrowing something that you're not going to return the exact same thing. So there's a difference, for example, in English, we say, lend me your car or lend me $100. You use the same word lend for both of them. But in Lashon Kodesh, technically, the car would be she'ela, and the one who's borrowing it is a shoyel. Money would be halva, and the one who borrows is a loiva. So Tosfos points out, right, strictly speaking, we mean over here, Reb Tyfon considers him a loiva, but because we're talking about the dinim of a shomer, and among the dalad shomim, you have the type called shoyel, who's chayev and oinsin, therefore he's using the expression shoyel, even though properly speaking it would be loiva, because obviously you're not returning the exact same coins that you sold the animal for. So therefore, said Reb Tyfon is saying, not only are you chayiv and gneiv v'aveda, that you'd be chayiv for, says Rav Yosef, anyway, because you, to begin with, you're a shomer sacher. But now, by virtue of the fact that you're allowed to use the money, then that makes you not only a shomer sacher, but a shoyel, and therefore you're chayiv even ba'oinsin. Rabbi Akiva holds that no, the Chacham do not allow you to use the money, so therefore the Hilchah Lo Havi Shoyel Alayhu, so you're not a Shoyel on the money, however Rabbi Yosef is going to say you are a Shomer Sacher on it. Tosfos, by the way, much of the long Tosfos over here discusses the point, who is the Halacha like? You have, on the one hand, you have other Gemaras that seem to imply that the Halacha is like Rabbi Yosef, And therefore, Rabbi Hananel and Halachas Golas say that the Halacha is indeed like Rabbi Yosef. On the other hand, Tosfos goes and says that those Gemaras are not necessarily a proof for it, and it goes through a long discussion on the ins and outs of that. One thing Tosfos points out, there is a general rule that the Gemara mentions in Bava Basra that the Halacha is usually like Rabba over Rabbi Yosef, except for three things, and this is not one of them, so therefore that should show that the Halacha is like Rabba, that a Shomer Aveda is a Shomer Chinam. On the other hand, the fact is, many other Rishonim disagree with that, and say the Halacha is like Rabbi Yosef, and they would have different proofs for that, and in the end, in Shulchan Aruch, that's how it's paskin, that the Halacha is like Rabbi Yosef, that a Shomer Aveda is indeed a Shomer Sacher, meaning that he's Chayev for Gneva Aved. Okay. So the Gemara says, okay, so now, what are you telling me then? So let's review then. In the Mishnah, Reb Tyfon is saying you're allowed to use the money, and therefore you're Chayev Bachur Yosef. Reb Akiva is saying you're not allowed to use the money, therefore you're not Chayev Bachur Yosef. Now, Now Rabbi Yosef is saying it doesn't mean what you think it means, that it means that that he can use the money and therefore he's a shrema sachar versus he can't use the money and he's a shrema chinam. But rather, in both cases, it would be at least a shrema sachar, and if he's allowed to use the money, then he actually becomes a shoyel. The question is, lefichach did Rabbi Akiva lomali? In that case, why is Rabbi Akiva using the word lefichach? What is the he's saying that. If according to him you can't use the money, then obviously you're not going to be chayav ba'on sin. If you say, like we assumed originally, that Rabbi Akiva is saying that that you can't use the money and therefore you're not a shrema sachar, okay, then we understand. In other words, like this, the Mishnah would be implying, not like Rabbi Yosef, you're not a shrema sachar ordinarily, only if you can use the money. And here, since you can't use the money, then you're not a shrema sachar and you're potter. But if according to Rabbi Yosef, you're a shrema sachar regardless, and the only question is whether you're becoming a shoyel, obviously you're not a shoyel unless you can actually use it. So therefore, why would Rabbi Akiva even have to say laficha? Once he says, well, yishtamash behen, automatically we would understand he's not a shoyel. And once he's not a shoyel, then you would know he's potter from onsin. So why does Rabbi Akiva, according to Rabbi Yosef's understanding, why does Rabbi Akiva have to use the word lefricha? And the Gemara types out the question. If you're going to tell us that they're arguing whether the shomer is chayav for gnev of aveda, hainu the patani, Rabbi Akiva and the lo yishtamash behen. Therefore, that explains. Rabbi Akiva is saying, you're not allowed to use the money. And therefore, if they're lost, then he's not chayav b'achu yosan. And we understand what the chiddush of that is. Because without that, without Rabbi Akiva telling us that, you would think that nevertheless he's a shrema sachar in all cases, and he's always chayiv or gnev v'aveda mechayiv, and he's always going to be chayiv in gnev v'aveda because of one or the other reasons of why Rabbi Yosef considers him a shrema sachar, truth to Rabbi Yosef, or the reward that he's going to get from Hashem for doing it, or whatever. So therefore then we understand why Rabbi Akiva has to stress l'ficha, that nevertheless, no, it's not so. He's actually a shrema chinam unless he's able to use the money. But since he's not able to use the money, then he remains a shrema chinam. So we understand the chiddush of what, and he continues. Kamash malam l'ficha. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva tells us the l'ficha. Meaning, hash to de'amit lo yishtamash behen. Once you're saying that he's not allowed to use the money, shrema sachar lo yhavi, then he's not a shrema sachar, he remains a shrema chinam, and prutta to Rav Yosef or any of the other reasons of Rav Yosef, we don't care about, what Rav Akiva would be saying implicitly, and therefore, v'lem chayiv, b'gnei v'aveda, and therefore he's not chayiv if it gets lost or if it gets stolen or lost. Eli yamit b'gnei v'aveda, the kol amale pligi d'chayiv, but you're telling me, Rav Yosef, that both Rav Taufan and Rav Akiva agree that he's definitely a shrema chinam, and he's definitely chayiv in gnei v'aveda. Well, in that case, ki pligi ba'onsin de shoyel, and all they're arguing about is whether he's chayiv like a shoyel in onsin. Well, my l'fichach de Rav Akiva. Then why does Rav Akiva have to say the l'fichach? Obviously, if you can't use the money, then you're not a shoyel on it, because by definition, you can't be a shoyel unless you're allowed to use the thing that you borrowed. So all the Mishnah should have had to say is Rabbi Akiva and the lo yishtamish behem. Rabbi Akiva is saying you can't use them, but I know your dinah, and automatically I would know to kivin de lo yishtamish behem lav shoyel habi ve'in achay b'achu yosan, and I would automatically know that if he can't use them, then he's not a shoyel or a loiva or whatever, and therefore he's not chay b'achu yosan. So the question comes down to l'fichach de Rabbi Akiva lamali. So why does Rabbi Akiva need to say his l'ficha? Why does he need to spell out that corollary that therefore he's not chayav b'achu yosan, which Rabbi Yosef is taking to mean that he's not chayav b'ein sin? Of course, what would he have? I mean, to make him chayav b'ein sin if he's not allowed to use the money. And the Gemara says, you're right. Mishum l'ficha d'Rav Tarfin. You're right, Rabbi Akiva does not really need to say his l'ficha. He's only saying it in order to be parallel with Rabbi Tarfin. Well, l'fichach de Rav Taufan mamali. Well, in turn, Rav Taufan, why does he need to say his l'fichach? Again, obviously, if you can use the money, then you're a shoyel, and therefore that you'd be chayev. Again, if you say like Rabbah, then it's more straightforward. Again, the point is, Rav Taufan wants to tell us, you're not a shema chinam unless, you're not a shema sachar even unless you're able to use the money. So therefore, in other words, not like Rav Yosef. But if you're telling me, according to Rav Yosef, And Tosfos says also you could also take Rabbi Taufan's lefichach to say to be medayik permit that only because you're allowed to use it are you chayiv. But other than that, if you're not allowed to use it, then you're potter. Again, not like Rav Yosef. But according to Rav Yosef, why would Rav Tirfen have to say it's lefichach anyway? And Tosfos goes on to discuss that nevertheless, maybe the chiddush is that the fact that he's able to use it doesn't make him a shoyel; it makes him only a shem asachar. So Tosfos discusses that a little bit. And says that it's not really the Gemara is not really asking a question on Reb Tarfon; it's just trying to explain what does Reb Tarfon want to tell us with his l'ficha. So the answer is hockey comma. We can say what Reb Tarfon means is as follows. Kiven the shorole rabbonim leishnamush begavayu, once the Chachamim gave him permission to use the money, kimandi shtamish begavayu dami. It's the equivalent of as though he already used it. We shouldn't say, in other words, if afterwards there was Gneva Vaveda, not Gneva Vaveda, we said according to Reb Yosef Yiskayiv, either way, Gneva Vaveda, if there was an onus, he can't say, well, the fact is I didn't use the money yet. Mela, if I'd used the money, I agree I should be chayiv for instance, but I didn't even use it yet. Why should I be chayiv for instance? So Reb Tarfon is telling us that no, once the Chachamim give him permission to use it, then it's considered as though he used it, and therefore he's chayiv achriyosan, and he's chayiv even for oinsin. In other words, the same way as, for example, a person borrows something, even if he had a regular thing, even if he hadn't started using it yet, he's already chayiv achriyosan once it came into his rishus. And they said, unless they made a deal otherwise between them, of course. And the same way, for example, you borrow money, even if you didn't spend it yet, you're still chai bachriyosan regardless. So it would be over here, says Reb Tarfon. So that's Reb Tarfon's l'ficha. You shouldn't think, yes, the Chacham gave you permission to use the money, but until you actually use it, you're not a shoyel. No, Reb Tarfon is saying, according to Reb Yosef, that even before you use it, you're already a shoyel by virtue of the fact that you could use it. Okay. So therefore, the Mishnah is not a contradiction on Rabbi Yosef, and we can say that both Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva do agree that he is a Shem Asachar as a baseline, and the question is whether he becomes a Shoyo. Rabbi Akiva, in fact, did not have to spell that point out, but once Rabbi Tarfon is explaining his point with the Lefikha, and that we need to know in order to tell us the Chiddush, that even before he uses the money he's already Chayim, then Rabbi Akiva uses his Lefikha as well, even though according to Rabbi Yosef it wasn't really necessary. Okay. So now the basis of what Rabbi Yosef has been explaining is that both Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva are agreeing that he's chayev that he's chayev as far as gneiva v'aveda, and the only machlokas is as far as onsin. The question is v'ha'avdu katani. The question is on the wording of the Mishnah. The Mishnah uses the expression in Rabbi Tarfon l'fichachim avdu chayev b'achriyosan, and Rabbi Tarfon l'fichachim avdu ena chayev b'achriyosan. Avdu generally means aveda, which is one of the things that an aveda where it's something that he could have prevented. It's not an ones, and a shem achinam is potter for it, and a shem asachar and a shoyel achayim. So what are you telling me, Rabbi Yosef, that they're arguing only as far as ones? The word avdu doesn't suggest an ones. And the answer is kidderaba, the same way as we find Rabba explaining the word avdu in a different context. Later on in the Masechta, it brings from a Mishnah in Masechta Shkolim that describes a case where people of a certain city have collected their Machzah Shekel, in Yonah Diyoma, because now it was Adar when they were collecting the Shkolim, so the people of a certain city collected their Machzah Shekel, and they designated, they appointed somebody to go and bring their collection of Machzah Shekel to Yerushalayim, and something happened, say it on the way. So the Mishnah describes over there that you can have cases where they were Ovdu or Nignavu, where they were lost or they were stolen, and then you have dinim about whether they have to give new matzah shekel, and who has to swear that the shliach has to swear, but does he swear to the people of the city in other words, is he considered at this point still that the money is considered their responsibility, and therefore he has to swear to them like any shomer, or would it be that he swears to the gizborim of the Beis Mikdash? We're going to discuss that whole point later on in the Masechta in the fourth parak. Anyway, the point is that Rabba explains over there, Da'amar Rabba, Nignavu, the word Nignavu in that Mishnah doesn't necessarily mean that it was stolen by regular Ganovim. We're showing a Socha would be chayav for that anyway. We're talking about Ballistin Mizuyan. We're talking about, Rabba explains over there, that we're not talking about that you have the person who's carrying the Matzah Shekel is doing it for free. We're talking about you paid him, which means that you, which means, so now, once you paid him, the people of the city have done whatever they could. They weren't careless. If they sent it with a Shem Echinam, you could argue it was careless, because what are you sending it with somebody who doesn't even have very much responsibility for it? But you're sending it with a Shem Esachar, who has a higher degree of responsibility. Listen, there's nothing more you could do. So therefore, and therefore you have dinim about when they're potter from paying again. And Rabbi explains that Nignavu in that Mishnah means the list in Mizuya. I mean, not that it was stolen from them, like somebody sneaked in during the night and stole the money box, but rather it means that they were held up by a list in Mizuya, by an armed robber, which is an oitz. Similarly, when the Mishnah says they're ovdu, doesn't mean that they were lost, as in, for example, that they don't remember where they put the money or whatever. It means shetava sfinas b'yam, means that it was being brought on a ship and the ship sank, which is an oinus. So we see, in other words, that the word ovdu, that the word ovdu can sometimes mean an oinus, and that's what, according to Rabbi Yosef, that's what it means in our Mishnah over here. Both Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva would agree that he's chayev for things that are not an oinus, gnev v'aveda, because he's a shrema socher, but they're only arguing whether he's chayev for oinus, and Rabbi Tarfon is saying him ovdu, if they were lost, meaning by an oinus, for example, the ship sinking, then ain't a chayev b'achriyosan, and Rabbi Akiva says he'd still be chayev b'achriyosan, because as we just worked out, Rabbi Akiva would consider him a shoyol, and Rabbi Tarfon does not. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amr of Yehuda Amashmo, halacha ke Rabbi Tarfon, the halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon, that he does have a higher degree of chiyuv, depending, as Tosfos discussed in Amud Aleph, whether the halacha ends up being in the machlokas Rabba or Rabbi Yosef, whether the halacha ends up being like Rabba or like Rabbi Yosef, is going to make a difference what we mean the halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon. If the halacha ends up being like Rabbi Yosef, as most Rishonim say, and as is brought in Shulchan Aruch, then it would mean Rabbi Tarfon would say that he's chayev for gneiv v'aveda, but he's chayev for everything, gneiv v'aveda and onsin, like a shoyl. And if we say the halacha is like Rabba, as Tosfos was saying, then it would mean Rabbi Tarfon would say that he's considered like a shomer socher, and then we'd say he's considered like a shomer socher and he's chayev for gnev v'aveda, but potter from onsin. Okay. So the Gemara tells a case that's going to relate to this. The Gemara tells biyad Rachva havelehanu zuzah diyasin. Rachva, one of the Amoraim, had in his possession, was taken care of money that belonged to Yisoyim. So there was money that belonged to Yisoyim that was deposited by him for safekeeping. Either the Yisoyim's father, before he passed away, had entrusted it to him, or the Yisoyim had an apotropos who, for whatever reason, is not able to hold on to the money himself, and therefore he deposited it by Rachva. You could even have, actually, where Rachva himself is the apotropos who's taking care of the Yisoyim, whatever the case. So he had this money being deposited by him. Agoris Habach, by the way, takes the word, not biyad Rachva, which means in the hand, but rather bei Rachva. Meaning in the household of Rachva, meaning the same idea. In other words, it was deposited for safekeeping in his household. And the question would be, Agoris Habach changes throughout the next few lines. It changes all the singulars to plurals, because according to him, the question was, the family as a whole came to ask a shayla whether they were allowed to use the money. So also the Kameh de Rabbi Yosef, so Rachva, or his family, came to Rabbi Yosef, Omalei, and he asks, Ma'olish t'mushe b'gavayu, would I be allowed to use that money? Omalei, and then set aside write an IOU, that eventually I'm going to reimburse the Yisrael in that amount of money. Omalei, so Rabbi Yosef says, yeah, Ochi Omer of Yehuda Amashmol, Allah, and Tarfon. Yeah, we see that the halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon in our Mishnah, as we just said. So yes, the same way as by a Shomer Aveda, you're able to use the money according to Rabbi Tarfon, and you are chayev b'achriyosan. So yeah, you're also in the same situation, Rachva, and therefore you can go ahead and do that. Omalei Abaye, but Abaye says to Rabbi Yosef, the lav itman Allah. Wasn't there said about that, that there's a little more detail in that, that you're not taking into consideration. All of that would only apply when you're talking about money of Aveda. So in other words, the money for which an Aveda was sold. So like we said in the Mishnah, when you found an animal, and after a certain amount of time, you sold the animal, and you're holding on to the money, the fact is that meanwhile, the fact is you had tircha of taking care of the animal to begin with, whether it was 3 days, or a month, or 3 months, or however long it was, for the different types of animals, as we worked out before, you did have a certain amount of time when you were putting in tircha into taking care of the animal, and therefore you should be entitled to use the, therefore you should be entitled to use the money, and Reb Tarfon is telling you that you are. And we're saying the halacha is like Reb Tarfon. Avol mois aveda, but when you're talking about actual money of the money itself that was lost and found, and now of course money many times does not have a simon, but Rashi points out we have cases earlier in our parak where there is. You found them inside a money bag and you're waiting for the owner to come and give a simon on the money bag, or you find 3 coins or more stacked in a tower like shape, like we learned on Daf Kof Hey. That you have to return those, etc. So yeah, there are cases. We have Mois Aveda themselves that you're holding on to. Deloitte Tarachbu, you didn't put any Tircha into those, then that's different. Loi, then no, you don't have the same dinim. Bahani Kamois Aveda Dhamu. Now Abaya points out to Rav Yosef, isn't this money of Yisraelim like Mois Aveda? Rachva didn't put in effort into this money. It's almost like it landed in his lap. Even if you say that he's the apotropos of the Yisraimim, fine. The fact is, he's doing other things for the Yisraimim, but not with this money. Amalei, so Rav Yosef says to Rachva Zil, go. In other words, I can't help you. They're not allowing me to be matuit to you. You're right. I think that you should be able to, but the fact is, Abaya is pointing out that you can't. Abaya was Rav Yosef's Talmud, but nevertheless, he does have a point that because of that, you shouldn't be allowed to use it. Mepharshim points out an interesting thing, by the way. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that when a person has come to a Din Torah, a Dayan is not allowed to tell him afterwards, you know what, I would have passed it in your favor, but the other guy is outvoted. So how was Rav Yosef able to say that to Rachva? And the answer is they were all in the Beis Medrash together. Rachva didn't just come to the Beis Din Shtibel. He came to the Beis Medrash. He was a Talmud Chacham himself. And he heard this whole discussion go on, so he knows perfectly well that Abaya had raised this objection, and it's because of that that Rabbi Yosef is telling him that he can't use it. So there's no holach rochel megalasoy. There's no revealing a secret over there. Rabbi Yosef is not revealing any secret that he shouldn't, because Rachva was there the whole time and then knows exactly what happened. Okay. Mishnah says, now, what about if you find, so now, the previous Mishnah talked about animals, where you have to feed them and do other things to take care of them. Now we're going to talk about things where you don't have to feed them, they're inanimate objects, but you have to do other things with them in order to keep them from getting damaged. So the Mishnah says, Matzah Sfarim, if you found Sfarim, and that can mean Sifrei Torah, it can mean other kinds of Sfarim, Rashi points out that all Sfarim in those days were made as scrolls. The whole concept of books, like we have them with separate pages, only came in a few hundred years later. They actually even found, for example, they found, in the Cairo Gniza, they found a fragment of a Gemara that was written like a Sefer Torah, that was written literally like a scroll. The Rambam also describes in one place, in Yad HaChazaka, the Rambam describes when he's dealing with a certain halacha where there are different gersois in the Gemara about it, he mentions, he says, I found a 500-year-old Gemara written on a scroll, written in a Sefer Torah style that has the gersa such and such. So yeah, it seems that up until the middle of the time of the Gaonim, even once they started writing the Mishnah and the Gemara and other Sfarim, it seems that originally Jews wrote their Sfarim in scroll form, and eventually only later did they start adopting the form of a codex and later on of a book as we have them nowadays. Anyway, so you find Sfarim. You're allowed to read from them once every 30 days, because every 30 days you have to open up the scroll and roll it in order to air it out, in order that it doesn't get moldy. So while you're doing that, then you're allowed to read it. If the person who found it doesn't know how to read, then he just rolls it in order to air them out. But you're not allowed to learn from them to begin with. You're not allowed to learn something new, because when you're learning something new, you're going to be keeping it open for a long time, and then it may wear out. and you're not allowed to have somebody else read from the Sefer together with you, because then each one is going to be pulling it in their direction to see it more closely, and then it may rip. Continues the Mishnah, if you find clothing, then you have to shake it out once every 30 days, because again, otherwise it'll get moldy. And you can also, you have to spread it out, you shake it out, and then you spread it out to air, l'tzorka, where it's needed for it, to prevent it from getting moldy or to get, or getting eaten by moths or whatever. But not spread it out for his own cupboard. For example, let's say it's a nice quilt or something like that, and you'd want to hang it on your wall as a decoration. You can't do that. And we'll learn about the details of that in the Gemara tomorrow, Baruch Hashem. The Mishnah continues. Klei kesef uklei nechoshes. If you find silver, and by the way, when the Mishnah had said, as far as the sforim, when it says yilmud behem lachatchila, v'lo yikra achar imay, are limud and kriya the same thing? The snare holds that actually they are the same thing, so you're not allowed to use the sefer at all to learn something new. On the other hand, the Rashash argues that maybe not, and says that kriya would be without delving into it, limud would be the iyun. So lo yilmud behem lachatchila, v'lo yikra achar imay. In other words, the Mishnah is saying, as far as learning, where you're going to be doing in depth, that you can't learn a new topic, because again, you're going to be keeping the sefer open for a long time, and it may get damaged, as opposed to lo yikra achar imay, as far as reading, even casual reading, that you can't do, even with somebody else, because they might end up with. So matzah ksus, if you find clothing, minara echad b'shloshim yom, then you shake it out once every 30 days, v'shoit chalitzorka, and you spread it out where it's needed for it, to keep it from getting eaten by moths or whatever, avaloy l'chvoidei, but not for his own cupboard, where he's doing it to decorate his house. Next, klei kesef klei nechoshes, if you find silver or copper kapim. Now, normally, you have to keep those buried in the ground. We're going to learn in the next parak that with valuable items, you have to normally keep them buried in the ground. That's considered to be the only safe way to prevent thieves from getting at them. So here, the problem is, if you keep silver or copper kalem in the ground for a long time, then they're going to rust. So therefore, mishtamish behen echad l'shloshim yom, so you use them once every, mishtamish behen l'tzorkon, you use them when it's necessary for them to keep them from getting, to keep them from rusting, or tarnishing, or whatever, avaloy l'shachkon, but not to use them so much that you're going to wear them out, that some of the keli is going to get rubbed away, you can't use them in that kind of way. So Rashi is explaining that this din is applying to both silver and copper kalim, the same thing, both of them you need to keep in the ground. The preacher, actually, I'm sure, learns a little differently. He says there's a difference between silver and copper in that regard. Yes, you have to bury them in the ground, like Rashi is saying, but it's not only that. Even if you have a situation where, for whatever reason, you're also burying them in the ground, like nowadays, you wouldn't necessarily have to. You have other ways of holding on to them. Nevertheless, copper is going to rust, even if it's not in the ground, and therefore you have to use it every so often. Silver, you can say, if you put it someplace away safely, then you don't have to use it. In any case, the Mishnah is saying, when you do have to use them, you can use them to keep them from getting rusty or whatever, but not when you're using them so hard or for so long that they're going to get rubbed out. Next, klei zahav or klei zchokis, if you find gold or glass kalim, now those are not going to rust or tarnish, and glass, in addition, Rashi points out, you might break. Therefore, the yiga behenav shiyaver Eliyahu, so you can't touch them until Eliyahu comes, meaning you put them away someplace safe, and you leave them there like that indefinitely. And eventually, when the owner comes, you'll unbury them from the ground and give them to him. Meanwhile, you have them in a place which is safe, and there's nothing that they're not going to get ruined by remaining in the ground. And fakert, if you use them, you have a chance that you might break them, as well in the case of the glass. Next. And the Mishnah continues, Motza sack oikupa. Suppose you found a sack or a kupa, which is a large basket, b'chol davar she'ein darkei little, or anything which you yourself wouldn't normally carry, because it's beneath your dignity, hareza lo yito, then you're not obligated to take it, because, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, we'll learn tomorrow, b'es Hashem, you're only obligated to pick up an aveda and return it only when it's lafi kvoido, only when it's within your dignity. If it's something that you yourself wouldn't normally be seen carrying, then you're not obligated to deal with it for somebody else either, as we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow, b'es Hashem. So, the Gemara starts off, Amar Shmuel, hamotze tefillin b'shuk. If a person finds tefillin in the street, shamed mein amanichem la'alter, then right away, he doesn't have to keep them for any amount of time, he can right away evaluate how much they're worth and sell them to somebody else who needs tefillin and manichon and put the money aside. The Ritva actually brings two explanations. His second explanation, which he prefers, is what we just said, that it means you set aside the money. The first explanation, he says, similar to the way we had before with the animals, where conceivably, when we said shamed mehen, might mean that he's allowed to sell the animals to himself. He's allowed to figure out how much they're worth and set aside that amount of money and start using the animal. Over here, it can also mean conceivably that he's allowed to figure out how much the tefillin are worth, set aside that money, earmark for the person to give him when he comes, and then start wearing the tefillin himself. But the other explanation, again, is not to wear the tefillin himself, but just to set aside the money after he sells them. So the Gemara says, Masiv Ravina. So Ravina says, what about it says in our Mishnah? Masiv Sfarim, Kodah Behen, Echol L'Shloshim Yom. We said if you find Sifrei Torah or other Sfarim, then you have to read them, then you can read in them once every 30 days. So you have to keep them for a long time and roll them every 30 days. We have any day liquid going on. And if you don't know how to read, then you roll them. So you can't just sell them and keep the money. Why by tefillin? Should it be any different? We're saying you have to actually keep the safer and roll it and take care of it. Why don't you just, if you're saying with tefillin, you could just sell them. Why not with a safer? The answer is, I'm going to buy it. Tefillin, be'bar chovu mashka shchichi. The difference is tefillin can very easily be gotten at the house of bar chovu. So that was their local sofer in that time, was the household of bar chovu. That was the local sofer's shop in those days, and therefore tefillin, it's very easy to get over there. So there's no problem if you found a pair of tefillin, and you're going to sell them and set aside the money, no problem. When the owner comes, it'll be easy enough for him to go to Beit Barachovu and get another pair of tefillin. Sfarim, Moishchichi, as opposed to Sfarim, are less common. So therefore, what good is it going to do him? You're going to give him the money, but it's not going to be so easy for him to get a new safer. So therefore, you have to hold on to the safer for as long as possible. There are other nuances in this as well. The Rambam uses an expression that tefillin are made only for their mitzvah, meaning, in other words, there's nothing else you can do with tefillin other than using them for their mitzvah, and therefore, Poskim talk about what exactly the implication is of the Rambam saying that. Does that mean, therefore, he's saying that the person doesn't mind one pair of tefillin is pretty much like another, and therefore he doesn't mind buying a new pair of tefillin and using that instead? Or does it mean that because they're meant to use for a mitzvah, therefore he would prefer as soon as possible that they're used for a mitzvah rather than just sitting there unused? An interesting Kabbalah dicker thing in this, it's brought in Sifrei Kabbalah, the name Chovu is Rosh HaTevis Chochma Bina Voda. Because the tefillin represent, the Zohar talks about the tefillin represent, the tefillin are worn, tefillin shorosh in particular, are worn on the head, in front of the brain, and they represent Chochma Bina and the two parts of Das. The Zohar mentions this in the Alter Rebbe and the Sidurim. Das has a couple of long Maimorim and then Biurim on the subject. So you have, therefore, that the tefillin represent, that the four compartments of tefillin represent Chochma Bina and the two parts of Das, which Das itself breaks down into Chesed and Gvura, or becomes the source for Chesed and Gvura, and therefore over here the name of the sofer was Chovu, representing that, standing for Chochma Bina Vodas. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tananabon, we learn in a Braisa. Hashoyos, let's talk about, now here in the Mishnah, we talk about when you found a Sefer Torah. What about if you borrow a Sefer Torah from somebody else? Hashoyos Sefer Torah Machavere, Hareza lo yashilenu la'acher, you're not allowed to re-lend out the Sefer Torah to somebody else. You can open up the Sefer Torah and read from it, which the Gemara is going to ask soon, what's the Chiddush in that, of course, what else did you borrow it for? So we'll get through, we're going to go through this Braisa line by line after we quote the whole thing. Anyway, so you open it and you read it. But again, you can't learn a new topic in it for the same reason as in the Mishnah, because then you're going to keep it open in the same place for a long time. You have to realize, by the way, nowadays we think of Sefer Torah as only something that you learn from in shul, but back then they actually learned from the Sefer Torah, because most of Torah Shabbat Peh hadn't been written yet, so they would actually learn from the written Sefer Torah, and then they would discuss all of the things of Torah Shabbat Peh by heart. So you can't learn from it, batchila. Well, yikra achar ima, and again, you can't have somebody reading with you for the same reason, because each one is going to be pulling it in his direction, and it might rip. Similarly, if a person puts a Sefer Torah for safekeeping as a deposit by somebody else, he has to roll it once every 12 months, and when he's opening it, he can read from it. Also, but if he's opening it to begin with for his own purpose, then that would be also, because here he's a shomer, and as a shomer chinam or shomer sachar, he has no business using the item. So if while he's opening it to roll it and air it out, he happens to glance at something and learn from it, then fine, but otherwise he would be shaleach yad the pikadon. Otherwise he'd be misusing a pikadon. Sumcho says it's not necessarily 12 months, but chodesh shloshim yom biyashin shnei masachodesh. If it's a new Sefer Torah, then you should open it up and roll it once every 30 days. If it's an old Sefer Torah, then you should do it once every 12 months. Because with a new Sefer Torah, Rashi points out, a new Sefer Torah is more likely to become moldy than an old one. So therefore, you have to roll it more. Rabbi Lezman Yaakov, Echad Zev Echad Zev, Shnei Masa Chodesh, and Rabbi Lezman Yaakov says either one, new or old, it's always 12 months. Which means, in other words, that... So now our Mishnah had said Achas L'Shloshim Yoim, so the Gemara is going to analyze that now when it goes through the Braisa and see what the detail is with that. So the Gemara says, Omamah Shoyl Sefer Torah Machaber Hareza Lo Yashulenu La'acher. We're saying if you borrow a Sefer Torah from somebody else, you're not allowed to lend it out to somebody else. The question is, my area Sefer Torah? Why mention specifically a Sefer Torah? I feel a Kol Milinami. Wouldn't that apply to anything else? Anything you borrow, you're not allowed to lend out to somebody else. The Amr of Shimon Lakish can shun a Rebbe. In fact, Rish Lakish says, in connection with a Mishnah in Gittin, we had learned in Masechta Gittin that you have a case where a person sends a get with a shliach, and he tells him, while you're going and delivering the get to my wife, go pick up this item from her. So then you're not allowed to delegate. Ordinarily, the shliach would be able to delegate the giving of the delivery of the get to another shliach. Shliach osa shliach, as it's called. But here, where he tells him to pick up to pick up something from her, then he's not allowed to. And in this connection, Rebbe taught in implicitly in that Mishnah what it says in a Braisa, Eina shoyo rashoy lahashil, veina soka rashoy lahaskir. That when you borrow something, you're not allowed to lend it out to somebody else without permission. And when you rent something, you're not allowed to rent it out to somebody else without permission. So then the same thing is true of everything. Why does our Braisa mention only a Sefer Torah? And the answer is, that's just it. Sefer Torah, it's Tzrichalei. The Chiddush is as far as a Sefer Torah. You would think maybe the person would appreciate that a mitzvah is being done with his possession. Therefore the Braisa is telling us not so, and you can't lend it out. Now, we do many times have the concept that a person does want a mitzvah to be done with his mamon. For example, we say you're allowed to borrow somebody else's talus or somebody else's tefillin because the person would appreciate a mitzvah being done with it. So one distinction that Ritva makes a distinction, because with svarim, where they can easily get ripped or otherwise wound, then the owner is more concerned about that. And because after all, you're gaining that you're able to learn from it. On the other hand, I may end up losing out that I don't have a sefer anymore because it rips, and then I won't be able to learn in the future. So therefore, there's that. The Shach also makes a point that even when it comes to a talus or tefillin, it doesn't mean on an ongoing basis you can be borrowing somebody's talus or tefillin without permission. It means as a one-time thing, as an occasional thing, you could do that. So then, and the same thing over here by Sforim. Now by Sforim, therefore, again, you have it by you for a considerable amount of time, so you can't do that. To do that, and Sforim are much more easily wound than a talus or tefillin, then therefore, that's why the Braise is saying you can't use them at all. So if, so you can't use them at all, again, when you're opening up to read them, if something happens to catch your eye, then you're allowed to learn from them. With that said, by the way, So that's that. So you see, you still can't lend it out to somebody else, even though that means a mitzvah will be accomplished with it, because the person didn't give you permission. Next, we said in the Braisa, you can open up the Sefer Torah and read from it. Question is Pshita, obviously. What else did you borrow the Sefer Torah for, if not to read from it? The answer is you're right. There's no chiddush in those words of the Braisa. The chiddush is the next part. Avol, over vajla, yomud revachila. But as long as you don't learn in it, l'chatchila, so that you don't learn in it a new topic, so that the Braisa had to point out that part, like we had in the Mishnah, that you're not allowed to learn a new topic in it, because then you're going to keep it open for a long time. So therefore, the Braisa introduced that by saying you are allowed to read from it when you're borrowing a Sefer Torah. But the point is, even though, of course, you're allowed to read from it, that's what you borrowed it for, you still have restrictions. What? Then the Braisa continued, when a person deposits a Sefer Torah for safekeeping by another person, he has to roll it once every 12 months, and he opens it and he reads it. Now that sounds like he's allowed to read from it, he's allowed to open it when he wants to read from it. So, what is that doing by him? It's a pikadin. He's not allowed to use the pikadin without permission. So the two, and also the Braisa continues, in Bishvilek Sochai also, that if he opened it for his own needs, then it's also Hamet Post Chavikodeh, but you just said that he's allowed to open it and read it. So what is it? Is he allowed to open it whenever he wants and read it, or is he not allowed to? The answer is Hokkama, im Kshu Golai Post Chavikodeh, if while he's rolling it, he opens it and he reads it, Mutter, then that would be allowed. In Bishvilek Sochai, but if he opened it for his own purposes to begin with, also, then that would be also, because then he's using the Pekodin inappropriate. So he's allowed. So when he's opening it up to roll it to prevent it from getting moldy, then if he happens to notice something, then good, he's allowed to learn with it, but not to open it for his own purpose, because that would be shaleach yad b'kodin. There are, by the way, poskim who say that it's different if your maskid is safer by a tamid chacham. First of all, again, our sforim are made much differently than theirs. They're less likely to get moldy over time. But second of all, also, they talk about that if you lend a sefer to a Talmud Chacham, if you deposit a sefer for safekeeping by a Talmud Chacham, yes, you should expect that he's going to learn with it, and it's considered as though implicitly you gave him permission for it. In a similar way, as we're going to learn in the next paragraph, if you mafkid money by a money changer, for example, where he regularly uses coins all the time for his business, then implicitly you're giving him permission to take those coins and use them for his business. So in the same thing over here, if you deposit a safer for safekeeping by a Talmud Chacham, yes, you should expect that he's going to open and learn from it, and it's considered as though you gave him permission for that. So our Gemara over here will be talking about, again, either where the person is not such a Talmud Chacham, and he just might have, occasionally, he might want to learn something, or we're talking about, again, where their Sforim were actually written beglila, they were written in scroll form, and therefore there was a much greater likelihood of them getting ruined by opening it up when you're not supposed to. Okay, we said in the Braisa, Sumchus Oimer B'chodesh Shloshim Yom B'yoshin Shneim Asachodesh. We said Sumchus had said that there's a difference between a new or an old Sefer Torah, how a new and old safer, how often you need to roll it, 30 days versus 12 months. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Oimer Echad Zeh Ve'Echad Zeh Shnei Masa Chodesh, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says either way 12 months. The question is, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Haino Tanakama. The Tanakama in the Braisa already had said, Kol Shnei Masa Chodesh. So what is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov adding? And the answer is, Ela Eimer, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Oimer Echad Zeh Ve'Echad Zeh Shloshim Yom. Rather, you have to correct the wording of the Braisa. Both Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, whether it's new or old, you only have to roll it once every 30 days. You have to roll it. Not once every 12 months, but once every 30 days. And that's how it is. So Rashi points out then on Mishnah, which said 30 days, follows Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And the halacha is usually like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and so it is over here. We said Avala Yumad Bilhatilavala Yikra Akhilim, but we said you can't learn a new topic in the Sefer Torah, whether you're watching it as an Aveda, or whether you received it as a Pekodin, or borrowed it, or whatever. You said you can't learn a new topic in it. Well, Yikra Akhilim, and you can't have somebody else read with you, because as you said, each person is going to be pulling it towards him and it might rip. But the Gemara says, Uraminu, I have a contradiction to that. A Braisa says, Lo Yukra Parasha V'Yishna, you're not allowed to read a Parasha and learn it again, because again, then again, you're keeping it open for a long time. Lo Yukra V'Parasha V'Yitargim, you're not allowed to read a Parasha in it and do the Targum for the same reason, you're keeping it open for a long time. Lo Yiftach V'Yosim Shlosha Dapin, you can't open it wider than three columns at a time. You can't have three people reading together in it from one volume. So that's the braisa, hoshnayim koden, implying that two people together would be able to. Amar Abaya, loy kasha, can be inyan echad, can be shnein yonim. It depends whether you're talking about whether reading from one topic, from one parasha versus two different ones. So Rashi explains, That two people is fine if each of them is reading a different portion. Because then each one is reading his own portion, they're not going to pull it one to the other. Each one is reading a different column in the Sefer Torah, for example, so therefore no problem. But if they're reading from one single parasha, and each one is going to want to look more closely in it, then they're going to pull it this way or that, and then it's going to tear. The Rambam learns the other way around, that where it's one topic, there's no problem of them each pulling it in their direction. They're both going to be looking closely at it and not pulling it towards them. Whereas with two different inyanim that Amam learns, that would be a problem for two people to do it, because each one is going to want to pull it to him because each one is reading from a different column. But in that case, that's the distinction. So sometimes you have, so one way or the other, depending upon the Rashi or the Amam, you have that distinction. Sometimes you are allowed to have two people do it, but never three. Okay. We'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem, with more analysis of the dinim of our Mishnah.
Stay
there, everyone.